We are going to be discussing interview tips for software engineering roles with Gaurav Sen, who is an ex-Uber engineer. You might know Gaurav from his famous YouTube channel where he talks about system design, competitive programming, and so on. He recently started a platform called Interview Ready that helps anyone become successful at general interviews for software engineering. So without further delay, let's get started. What we are going to do is we are going to take questions from our viewers. We are going to discuss them one by one. So Gaurav, thanks for spending time for this conversation.
Thank you. Thanks, Dhaval, for inviting me, and it's a pleasure. Let's see.
All right, let's straight away jump into the questions, and most of these questions are around interview tips. So the first one is from Rahul Aladi. He's asking how tier 3 college students can prepare for FAANG companies. You yourself have worked at Uber, which is tier 1 company. You're running a YouTube channel which talks about system design, which is kind of a main section nowadays if you're interviewing at FAANG. And then you have this interview ready platform as well. So I think you are the most appropriate person for this question.
So there's probably two major ways. One very popular and very famous way is to do competitive programming, where a person prepares through algorithms and data structures. So they go on competitive programming sites like Codeforces, CodeChef, LeetCode. LeetCode is not really a competitive programming website, but yeah, when they get good ranks over there, their resume stands out. So what happens is the big companies, they keep looking at these competitive programming websites, and the top performers are asked for, you know, job interviews and everything. So it doesn't matter which college you are from, the top performers get that job interview opportunity. So this is a good way to, you know, do that if you're a tier 3 or a whatever tier college student. Having said that, yeah, the competition here is very intense. It's almost like the rest of India is playing against you. And it's like, to be honest, I feel like sometimes cricketers, you know, it's a very intense field. Just like that, if you're looking for this to get a job, it's a really intense field. Okay, the second part would be to probably get internships, which is much better in my opinion as a software engineer. Once you have internships, you have some work experience, you have a good idea of what's going on, you get paid. So all of these things are good things. You can try, you know, GSOC is one thing. I'm not sure if they've changed the name now, but you get a summer internship, get some experience, and then the companies are interested in your profile because you're not just somebody who they have to trust, but they know that you know how to work in a organization, and they know that you know how to, you know, the basics of software engineering has already been taken care of in your internship, your previous internship. So the bet is, it's a good bet to make. So I would suggest, yeah, if you're from a tier 3 or tier, you know, whatever college, probably go for internships as much as you can. If not, if you're interested only in algorithms, then yeah, competitive programming is another way.
Got it. And Gaurav's channel talks a lot about system design. And someone was telling me that nowadays they ask system design questions, especially if you're an experienced professional, they ask a lot about system design. So maybe you can refer to Gaurav's channels. And a shameless plug, I have a data structure and algorithm tutorial playlist in Python with exercises. So you can practice that there as well. Now, the second question is kind of related to what we just discussed. It is from Abhinav, and he's asking, he's a fresher trying to get into FAANG companies. Nowadays, they ask a lot of system design questions. So how can one prepare for system design? So share some resources, especially on system design.
So on system design, my favorite book is Designing Data Intensive Applications. It's by Martin Kleppmann. He's a ex-LinkedIn engineer. He's now, I think, a researcher, and he speaks in a university. If I'm not mistaken, it was a pretty popular university. I think it was Oxford, if I'm not wrong. But yeah, you know, Martin Kleppmann's book, Designing Data Intensive Applications, is absolutely awesome. There is a website, which is a free website for blogs. So that is High Scalability. I like that website. That's where I learned system design. It has some blogs. It's not got a lot of content. It's got a ton of links though. So it's like Twitter in that way, that people share these links. He actually collects it and puts it in a nice place. You can click on those links and you can learn about different systems, different situations where these systems were made. I have a system design playlist on YouTube, which is entirely, again, free. It's pretty good. I have prepared using it for my own interviews sometimes. So it's like, in my opinion, it's okay. It's pretty good. Yeah, and it's been viewed by a lot of people. A lot of people have found it useful. So I will be fair on myself by actually promoting it and saying that it's actually really nice. Okay, now apart from that, there is also paid course. There are multiple paid courses. I will talk about Interview Ready, which is a paid course that I have for system design. It's a video course. In my opinion, of course, it's the best, but you can make your own judgment. Personally speaking, though, there is no course out there which talks about the design aspect, like high-level design, low-level design, API contracts, stuff like that, as well as Interview Ready does. So what happened is, after 2 years of making YouTube videos and figuring out through the comment section and through various places, what do people actually look for when they're preparing for a system design round? That's when we came up with this product. So yeah, some free resources would be nice. The book would be Martin Kleppmann's Design Data Intensive Applications. And if you're looking for a video course, a paid thing, then Interview Ready is where I would suggest to go.
So your course talks mainly about system design, basically. So it goes over like various system design, like design WhatsApp, design Facebook, things like that.
Yeah, design WhatsApp is a very important one. I have it on YouTube though. Design Gmail is the first design in the course. You also have stuff like designing a calling app. Like, for example, right now we are having a Zoom conversation. So that is a video conferencing one. You can also have WhatsApp calling. So that became very popular recently. And in total, it has 9 designs. It's interesting. There are some low-level design questions also. So for senior engineers especially, they ask you to not just design at a high level, but they also ask you to code things as design. So in that sense, it is difficult to think if you don't have experience. How am I going to actually write this in code? How am I going to make it extensible? One interesting topic that nobody talks about, right, because it's complicated, I think, is concurrency. While as an engineer, within 1 year, you're dealing with pretty much is concurrency. So the tests for senior engineers are around that latency, concurrency. And in Interview Ready, I made sure that that is also added in every low-level design chapter. So there's 3 and all 3 designs have concurrency in it.
Talking about that book, Designing Data Intensive Applications, I initially thought it is, and I have not read that book. So many people have given me good recommendation. I initially thought that book is mainly on databases, but sounds like it's not just databases, general application design, correct?
Yes, yes. To some, it is, there is a focus on databases and consistency, but yeah, it is general to that extent, yeah.
Okay, we'll put links of all the resources that you mentioned, Gaurav, including your course, in the video description below. So if someone is preparing for interviews, if you have a dream of joining FANG companies, go check those resources. The next question is from Rupesh Ayapuredi, and he's asking effective way of practicing interview questions in a bachelor's final year. So here is a person, bachelor's final year, preparing for FANG interviews or general, I think, tech interviews. What are the important points to keep in mind during an interview? How to explain my project in an interview? Please cover everything that is necessary for an interview from basics to advanced.
Well, what's going to happen is I would suggest treat it like it sounds too much, but treat it like a system design interview, right? And there's a reason why I'm saying it, because it is something that you have made. It's a project. So when they say, what did you do here? If you start and you never stop, they might get bored. So instead, let's say, I'll take an example. I built a complaint portal for people to make complaints against the municipal corporation. Hmm. Okay, that's a 2-sentence thing. And then if they're interested, yeah, you can ask more things. Like, yeah, it does a website. There was a cron job, which used to schedule tasks. And then you get deeper and deeper into the system. So my suggestion would be to start simple, give them a thumbnail like image. Like on YouTube also, you see a thumbnail. If you click on it, you get to see the description of it. Maybe you don't even see the video. You just see the description and the comments, the first 5 comments. And then you go like, okay, yeah, this seems like a good video. Let's watch it. So give them that, give them bite-sized chunks so that they like it. As they get into more detail, if you have actually worked on the project, there's always going to be something or the other which is interesting. If it's boring, then don't mention it on your resume. Like, you don't want to put that. Yeah.
Cool. And I think being honest here is extremely important. Some people just lie, and usually interviewers are smart people, you know, usually. So please don't lie and talk about the things which you have actually done. Soft skills are equally important, you know, like your communication, your listening skills. As you mentioned, some people keep on talking. I mean, no one wants to hire a person who just keeps on talking, you know. You need to have those skills where you stop in between, have an active conversation, let other person speak, and just make it like really engaging conversation. Akhilesh M has multiple questions. We'll go one by one. The first one is, should we constantly be in touch with competitive programming even after getting a job?
My suggestion personally, no, it's a bad idea. In my personal experience, whoever has been in touch with competitive programming has not performed well in their job. I'll be as blunt as possible. There have been people who started competitive programming after getting a job and got fired. So
really? Yeah. That's kind of a new thing I'm hearing.
So there were people, they you know, used to spend 3 hours, 4 hours on the competitive programming thing. And there's no way that you can, you know, after a certain point in time, your manager knows that you're writing extremely bad code. You're not able to meet the tasks, the deadlines. You're just focused on what's that algorithm on the back of your head, and your career is over if you keep, you know, pushing it. So my suggestion would be, don't do competitive programming after you have a job. If you can avoid it, but if you love it, then what do you do, right? Like it's your passion, it's your drug. So in that case, if you can do it only after work hours, it's not easy to do that, because a lot of people in college, what happens with them is they become accustomed to skipping lectures or during the lectures thinking about the problem in their own notebook. And when you come for a job, like people have much higher standards.
Got it. And I think one downside of this that I can think about is, you have to be really practical. When someone is offering you a job, you are solving some business problem and you want to solve it in a reasonable amount of time period. So let's say I am doing some custom shorting on my, you know, NumPy array in Python. If there is a ready-made method in NumPy or some other Python library, just go use it. Just to improve your competitive coding skill, don't try to code that algorithm yourself, which is already available. Because then you might introduce bugs, you are just delaying project unnecessarily. So I think from that angle, I can say I would agree with the point you just mentioned. The second question is, how to increase logic building in for competitive programming? And in general, I'm getting this question a lot, where especially people who started learning programming recently, they find this problem where they learn the syntax, but they don't know how to improve that logic building.
What happens after you learn the syntax is, so I think, again, taking it step by step is really useful here. Personally, I had college practicals where when I learned the syntax, then they said, okay, now do merge sort. And I was like, oh my God, okay, I have to think about this. There's a pointer here and there's that memory address that I'm putting stuff in. And it felt good when I got the answer. So do merge sort is a very simple problem statement. Take it one step. Difficult competitive programming is actually one step difficult. They have some nonsense like, you know, chef wants to do this or something, but you get to apply those concepts. Nobody tells you to use merge sort, but they will tell you that you need to sort an array. Or there'll be when you come to a solution, you realize you need to sort it. That is one step ahead. You know, you're applying what you know. And in the real world, of course, it is even more complex because the customer may not know what they want or may not be able to communicate exactly what they're looking for technically. So you have to have the communication skills to get that out. You also have to have the presence of mind that it's not about an algorithm at the end of the day. It's about solving a customer's problem. If they say that this is what I need, don't try to fit your algorithm in there. Like, yeah. I can do this really fast. In fact, I actually had a case of this in interview ready. We have young engineers with us who are really passionate and motivated. You know, one of them was like super passionate about algorithms also. So he said that this is going to be order n square, this matching algorithm. And I said, that's fine. That's just okay. You know, just go ahead. Order n square is totally fine. I know order n is better, but it's going to take you some time to come up with an algorithm. Let's push it out to prod. Let's see if the number of users is more than 1,000 for this particular slot, right? Then we think.
many times, you know, it's kind of funny, like conversation that we have is, oh, as a business owner, I don't care about speed, dude, just deploy it. You know, I don't care about performance. And these guys are so committed to algorithms, like, no, but I care about environment. You know, I care about the CPU cycle, the energy waste and all that. Oh my God, gets crazy at times. The next question is, generally, how long does it take to prepare for big tech giants? I think this is a general question. I would add some specifics to it. Let's say there is someone who is working for tier two, tier three companies. The person is doing 9-to-6 job, busy. Now the person wants to join tier one companies, FANG, Google, Facebook. In your opinion, how much time that person needs to put in order to prepare for big tech?
Yeah, I think Dhaval, you have also spoken about this quite a bit. And it's really, so in my personal opinion also, it is quite similar to that. It depends on what you're doing. If you're working a full-time job, which is most likely the case, so don't put all your eggs in one basket would be sort of the idea. You can prepare for in 3 months. In 3 months, you should have a pretty good amount of time, even if you're working a full-time job.
I agree, like 3 months time period every week, you're spending at least 4 to 5 hours for preparation. 3 months might be good. I suggest the other strategy to people, which is, okay, don't worry about preparation. Just start applying, you know, start applying in company. It's not like if you applied in Google, you got rejected. They will not take you. Every company has time period. Okay, you can reapply back after 6 months. But by going through that first interview experience, you learned a lot of useful things. You know, what they're asking, that whole experience is going to be a lot of value when you appear for the interview second time. So right. I generally suggest start applying, and as you apply, as you appear for the interview, keep on preparing in parallel. And I did an interview with my good friend Prasad, who cracked interviews in 10 big companies actually. So he used to work with me, by the way. He's a good friend of mine. And he cracked interview in Amazon, Facebook, Affirm, I think Microsoft. So many companies, like 10 job offers he had in hand. And so I'm going to provide a link of that video. So we talked about a lot of like soft skills. You know, how do you approach the interviewer? How do you use interviewer to your advantage? Usually you feel like interviewer is the one who is driving the entire conversation, but no, you can apply some techniques so that you can be the one driving the interaction, and you can be the one influencing what type of questions interviewer would ask you. So there are some soft skills which we have mentioned in that interview.
Yeah, I've seen that video. It's actually excellent. In fact, if you have just 1 day or 2 days remaining for the interview, or I mean, if you can watch it 2 or 3 weeks before your interview, it's perfect. But even if it's like really close to your interview, guys, I would strongly suggest, because I also saw that video and I was like, this is amazing. This guy, I mean, Prasad has cracked so many interviews. But he's also able to, I think, bring some method to that madness. Like, he doesn't just say, okay, yeah, fine. I tried my level best and this is what happened. He actually has some really good advice when it comes to interview, or even in terms of preparation. Like, the advice, I found it to be super useful. So, yeah.
Yep. The last question from Achilles is, how to overcome FOMO? It's like, I want to learn that new tech too. And this is happening very, very often nowadays, where, you know, so many new frameworks are coming in, so many new technologies, data science and AI is emerging. So now you are a .NET developer working for Infosys, for example, and now you want to learn data science, you want to learn React. Well, cybersecurity is cool. Why don't I try that? And how about cloud? And like, you just get lost. So how do you overcome that FOMO feeling? FOMO is basically fear of missing out.
I think it's been there forever. You know, honestly, there was this time when people said, I'm not working with Spring. I'm working with old structs. It's so boring. And even before that, there was a thing that, okay, I'm working with this C++ framework. I'm not using the latest technology. It's always going to happen. And I don't see any way around it. For the people who feel like, you know, they are working with very old technologies, maybe it is true. Maybe you're working with very old technologies, in which case, you can, look for a job switch if you're very bored. If you want to move to the product side of things, like if you are more interested in product than in the technology of the company, you can also look for that. If that you're, you know, the larger companies all have their own tech stacks. That is how they solve that problem, in my opinion. They have some open source things, and everything else they try to build themselves, because the engineers tend to get bored very quickly, and also because they need that kind of optimization. If you're feeling bored that some framework has come in and you're not getting to use it, the company's money and the company's time is not your money and your time. I mean, to put it very bluntly, I'm sorry.
I agree. It's like, okay, I'm working in .NET. I want to learn machine learning. Company is not going to like invest in that. Come on, right? It's not company's business.
You pick up a side project. It's not illegal, right? The government is not stopping you. The company is saying, please don't use my stuff for that. So
yeah,
that's okay. that's fine. Yeah, ask your manager.
I mean, I would say this. First of all, this is a common problem. Okay. I talk to so many of my subscribers on LinkedIn, YouTube comments, and everyone gets lots in the glory and drizzles of the next big thing. For example, AI. AI is the next big thing. Everyone wants to learn it. Why? Because it pays you really well. If you're just thinking about pay and if you're just thinking about the next buzzword, I think you're making a big mistake. First, look, introspect, you know, what you are good at. You might be a .NET developer, but the next cool move for your career might be to become maybe a business manager, because you are very good in communication. You are good in relationship building. You're good in sales. My brother is a computer engineer. He didn't like coding. He started a company. He's doing sales. Sales is something he enjoys. It's not that just because you have a BTech degree or just because you have been doing coding for 10 years, you need to do coding for the rest of your life. It's not like that. You better do things, which is, you know, that Ikigai book, basically the whole Venn diagram. The thing you are good at, the thing you love doing it, and the thing that can pay you decent money. You don't want to be a typewriter, like typist, you know, but because you want to be basically in a profession which can earn you some good money, decent money. But doing that introspection is extremely important. Talking about AI, nowadays, many people just learn TensorFlow, PyTorch. They learn the syntax. They write 6 lines of code. They train some model. They think they know AI, but no. For AI, you need a solid math and statistics fundamentals. Are you ready to learn math and stats? If not, why are you saying I want to become less a machine learning engineer, right? It's just you're just living in this very delusionary world. You know, you're not having a clear direction. So having that introspection is point number one. And then the point number two is do little experiments. So you are, again, going back to .NET developer example, try to learn AI in your free time for maybe less next 3 months and see how it goes. If you don't like that, maybe try to learn cybersecurity. By doing little experiment, you will be able to figure out what works best for you. And this is the answer only you can get. You know, no one else can advise you or tell you that, okay, this is what you should be doing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And like you said, if you want to venture out, you can, you know, do some sort of small side project, or there's a lot of open source stuff also out there where you can go and start contributing. You see, many a times, like, this is something that has happened to me personally. I say, I like this, but I have no idea about it. And if I really look deep inside me, I sometimes see, I don't really like this, but I hate what I'm doing right now. So anything is better. Like, oh yeah, this machine learning thing sounds really interesting. That's the next big thing. And then when I go and actually see what's actually happening there, maybe it's not interesting me enough. So like, system design actually does interest me quite often. But one day might come when I say that it's not interesting me enough. I need to move. And, you know, the way I can tell that is going to be, oh, I like playing with crayons. But reality, I don't like playing with crayons. So, yeah, that's my understanding of a lot of people also. They say that I want to do automation testing. No, you don't want to do automation testing. You want to be a developer. Or, you know, I want to do marketing. But maybe you don't really want to do that. Maybe you want to try something else. So yeah, be careful about what you're looking for also next. Really explore and then make the decision. Because if you have family or if you have even like basic responsibilities, then, you know, it's a risk. So better to put your toe and check the water before jumping.
Cool. Nishant Kumbhar is asking how to crack interview or how to influence interviewer so he or she recruits you. List all interviewing skills that everyone should know.
I don't know. Apart from telepathy and mind games, these are some practical things that I have found useful. If you're talking about what you're doing during the interview, you have a thought process, and, you know, you can draw it out, but the interviewer finds it really useful if they can see into your mind. So the only way you can do that is actually by speaking pretty much all the time. I should say that you're not flooding the conversation, but whatever you're thinking, whatever is your thought process, just tell them, okay, I'm thinking of an example here. Then you say, okay, fine, this didn't work. I'm going to backtrack. I'm going to try something else. At this point, what happens is the interviewer is able to look into your head and say that, okay, this is what the candidate is thinking. As an interviewer, I am interested in giving you hints. I am interested in helping you out. I will help you catch silly mistakes also. That's my basic responsibility as an interviewer. So if you are involving me, I will do my level best to make it a conversation. Unfortunately, what happens with many tech questions is that people just hear the question and they go like, okay, I'll try to solve it. And then they try to solve. They're writing in the notebook. Like when I've taken one-to-one interviews, I've seen people writing on the notebook. I'm trying to look into what's going on in the notebook, you know, because like, what's going on here? So it's very hard to give a hint then, because suddenly they say that, oh, it didn't work. Can you give me a hint? Or they say, oh, it didn't work. And they're looking at you. They're of course hoping for a hint, but you go like, dude, I don't know where you were going. I can't give you a direct, like, half answer, right? So to make the interviewer happy, you have to keep them involved in the process. And one easy way is to just talk about what you're thinking.
Another tip I can give is, before interview, you have read the job description. You know about the company, right? Let's say you're applying for the company that I work for, Bloomberg. It's a financial data analytics company. You know, you have read the job description. You know what they're looking for. Now you go for an interview. In past, let's say you have worked in multiple industries. You have worked in finance, retail. If someone is asking you to talk about project, talk about finance projects, because the interviewer, you know, is from finance domain. They will be able to connect well. They will be able to ask meaningful questions. But you talk about boring retail project, they will move on to their next coding question. They will not spend much time discussing your projects. If interviewer spends more time discussing your project and what did you do, you are at advantage, because now you are talking about the things you are familiar with. You have upper hand. You can talk about technical architecture. You get all kinds of opportunities to impress the interviewer. So really, like, describe the project that you think is aligning with what that company is doing, and then come up with a very nice, smooth explanation. People spend hours and hours practicing competitive coding. They don't spend even 1 hour doing a mock session on how do you explain your project to other person. Maybe you have a friend in your college, you know, just pretend that person is taking your interview and try to explain your project to that person and see if that person understands, and ask that person to provide a critical feedback. So do a lot of mock session on explaining just your resume, your projects. That will help, I think.
So one of the things about this is that if there is a candidate who's applying for, let's say, a machine learning engineer role, and they talk more about data analytics, it's much more interesting than if they start talking about, let's say, designing a website. You might have done both, but choose the one that people are hiring you for, the role that they're hiring for, relevance. Also, I'll be honest, I'm sure nobody's going to accept this on paper, but as an interviewer, when you talk to a candidate and you like them, you really, really like them, out of 5, you have 1+ point already. Yes. You might have actually scored 3, they're going to give you a 4. You might have scored a 2, they're going to give you a 3, because they like you. They want to hire you. And it's a subjective thing. Like, at the end of the day, no manager is going to come and tell me that, how dare you? It was not a 3, it was a 2. It's just, I like the guy. So, and he seems like a proper fit. So communication skills is like 5. So yeah, I'm giving him a 3 out of 5. That's the reason why you want to actually talk about things which are relevant to the role.
All right. Last question. Srinivas Pakalapati is asking, switching from non-IT to IT domain, what are expected from the employee? if having good knowledge of data structure and algorithm and one programming, can we switch to IT domain and what else is needed? So general tips for anyone who is transitioning from non-IT to IT domain.
Yeah, non-IT to IT, one of the things, I mean, if you're switching in the same company, it's much easier in my experience. One of the things that you can do is, yeah, you can focus on one programming language. Data structures and algorithms is not so often asked. You usually move to a position where it's going to be like, it's not the most exciting work in the world. For example, you are going to be doing, my experience, you have expert HTML, CSS people. You have expert JavaScript people. You're the person who's going to be building internal products and simple HTML, CSS ones. This is where they start. Because as a manager, to give that kind of trust, you need to perform multiple times so that you get that kind of trust. So from a non-IT role, when you come to IT role, it's going to be pretty manual in the start. There's going to be a lot of help around you, people who are much more, who are able to help you out easily. So they are not expecting you to know everything, which is a good thing, right? So you can easily transition. If you're a tester who's looking to, you know, go to automated testing, then, and also then slowly switch to, let's say, software engineer. One of the things that I would do is try to keep good relations with the engineering team, try to keep good relations with the engineering managers, if possible, and then try to like ask them for advice. The best way, if you're looking for any kind of switch internally, is to ask people what they're looking for and tell them that this is what I want to do. They'll actually help and the expectations will be clear.
Many times people don't do that. They just assume, you know, they just assume that I'm working as a sales manager in this company and I can't go to the IT department. But no, it's possible. Just ask for it. Very good advice, Gaurav.
Totally. No, 100%. Like, because all the managers are looking for good talent. And, you know, if you are passionate enough, nobody asks. That is the reason why the person who asks gets. So if I ask the sales manager that please help me understand sales, I want to do something around this, they're going to be like, wow, this engineer guy wants to learn sales. Okay, that's fine. You know, I can help you out. So they are very positive usually.
Everyone feels happy, you know, when you portray them as mentors, you know, they're like, wow, I'm a mentor. I'm teaching him, you know, I know something. I have some worth. And see, if you're trying to switch from non-IT to IT career, programming is not the only thing. Programming is a small part of IT world. There is Scrum Master. There is Product Manager, Data Analyst, you know, AI world. There are so many new opportunities like Data Annotation Engineer, for example. You're not doing coding that much. You can do RPA. There are so many jobs available as an RPA executive where little coding is required. Some other soft skills are required. So there are hundreds of roles in IT company, any IT company that you look at. So if you are a sales manager working in manufacturing, for example, you're bored and you want to switch, try to go for a role where you can use some of your existing expertise and experience, right? Being a sales manager, although you are in manufacturing industry, you understand human psychology. You know the art of how to sell. So maybe then become a sales manager in the IT company itself. So now you're part of the IT organization. You're talking with some engineers. You're talking with business manager. And then gradually switch. So directly, rather than like, you know, sales manager to coding, sales manager in manufacturing to sales manager in IT company, and then gradually become a programmer. And the same company, you know, if you make a transition in the same company, it's much more easier.
100%. There's also one small thing in this. If there's a sales manager, like, and an entry-level engineer, the sales manager earns a lot more. So how do you afford to make that transition? The only way would be to actually make a slow transition. You can become an engineering manager eventually. You're probably not going to be, you know, a staff engineer, because that role is like an IC for coding. So better, like, absolutely what you said, Dhaval, like, slowly move towards IT and then join them instead of being, okay, tomorrow, lead code time.
Yeah, lead code time, I will get a job in Google. No, that's not how it works. And you'll be, you know, hugely disappointed as well. You know, you might start feeling inferior that, oh, I tried this, it doesn't work, but maybe your approach wasn't right. Okay, let's talk about your Interview Ready platform. Okay, what is Interview Ready? What is your mission? And how do you help people become successful at interviews?
So Interview Ready is a platform where we want to, which looks to place people in their lives in the right way. So at the moment, we are focused on software engineering, especially for people from SD1 to SD3. Although there are more senior engineers who have used the product and found it useful, but I personally think that they do it for revision or, you know, for brushing up on their basics. But that's what we are looking to do. We want to place you in the right companies and we want to make the interview process as easy as possible. It's unfortunate, in my opinion, that interviews have a bad name for either asking irrelevant things or you have to, you know, do 600 lead code questions to get the answer. I think as an engineer, interview preparation should help you become a better engineer. When you come out of it, you should be better at solving problems, a more diverse set of problems, than practice, you know, typing on the keyboard fast enough and thinking about edge cases all the time. So that's the mission. What we have right now is a course on system design, which deals with high level and low level design. We also have a upcoming product. It's still not out, but it's coming out soon. I don't have an exact date in my mind, but probably end of this month, we should have a MVP out, which is mock interviews. The general idea, I mean, I'll be honest, the general idea is that coding interviews can be automated to some extent, but system design interviews have not been automated yet. There's coding interviews, you write an answer. If the code passes, yes. If the code doesn't pass, no. While in system design, you need to have a person who evaluates your design. So when you're practicing, it's really difficult because how do you schedule an interview with someone? The mock interview platform, you know, you need to schedule an interview. The interviewer may be good or bad. They may give you very subjective feedback. They may not be having a good day. So for practice, you want to make it as objective and as, you know, reliable as possible, as predictable as possible. And that's the problem that we are trying to solve. We are trying to make a mock interview platform, which you can take a mock interview for right now. You don't need to schedule it for day after tomorrow. You want to practice mock interview right now? Go ahead right now.
Wow. That's the idea. Automating system design interviews. That sounds amazing. I need to check it out whenever that's out. All right, Gaurav, thank you very much for your time. I think this was super useful. We are going to provide all the resources in the video description below. Any final closing thoughts?
So thank you so much, Dhaval, for actually making this possible. It was your video with Prasad, which actually got me really excited to collab about this. And I think the stuff that you have done on data science and on, you know, the content that you have been producing consistently for such a long time is amazing. Also the pace of that content and the quality is like absolutely amazing. So hopefully we'll have a collaboration again soon where you can come on our channel and speak about how do you move to data science, or how do you, you know, there's general career advice also that you have so many years of experience, which is so valuable. And I think a lot of our audience, our combined audience will benefit. But thank you so much for inviting me for this thing.
Great. Thanks. I'm going to end this now. Thank you.